Hugh Masekela leading his band with Timlela. It's from his 2002 album, Time. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And we have emphatically entered a whole new chapter of life as a nation, with the United States at the direction of the President of the United States launching an attack it is hard just to say where, one place, because even though the attack is localized, it clearly involves a whole range of people fighting proxy wars in Iraq. So it is going to get very nasty, even nastier than it already is. And if this does not indicate to the people, just the people, I mean, certainly it would matter to, at least one would think, it would matter to people in positions of leadership in this country. But it is going to cause a horrendous chain reaction in terms of retaliation for the U.S. attack. All right, it's Free Your Mind Friday. It is where you take the conversation where you want it to go. Hopefully, you'll take it to relevant places, and we will see what's on your mind at 888-874-4888. Please keep your comments as concise as possible, and we'll get through this, but I just don't want to take more time. This is your time. But I do want to stress that we should be priming ourselves for a really nasty turn of events as a result of Trump's directive to start a war by killing a top general in Iran. We're learning the president didn't consult with anybody. Members of Congress, senior members of Congress, had no idea this was going to happen. And even people who are experts in this area are saying this is just so terrifying in its implication. They don't even want to think about it. But they do know that there will be a very serious and imminent reaction. So brace yourself, and we should be talking about what do you do? What more is needed to suggest that the President of the United States is beyond reckless? Beyond reckless. Making decisions, and you can see now, as you go back a little bit, you can see the logic in his head that he has to clear out all people who are likely to impede what he personally wants to do. So at a time like this, you see the almost complete absence of sane people in the upper echelons of advice giving. He doesn't need advice. He has an army, an air force, a navy, and the various other military type outfits available to him, and he's having a great time. He's always wanted his own personal war. And he's not alone. He has good friends like Netanyahu of Israel and others who believe this is the way to go. They're not fighting. Their sons and daughters are not going to be fighting. It's other people's sons and daughters, and, you know, they're dispensable. So you can take a big fat gamble, especially if you know you're in trouble with being reelected. You do something on a grand scale, and you worry about the consequences, if any, later on. So let me shut up and let's get on with our program, Free Your Mind Friday. You set the rules for what it is you want to talk about. Make sure you have an opinion. Don't just get on the air and start yammering. Let's hear your opinion about whatever your subject matter is. 888-874-4888. Jay from New York, you're up first.
Yes, good afternoon, Nutrice. I hope all is well. First of all, I totally agree that this is just basically a war for his self-aggrandizement and to get the impeachment story out of the media and put this whole thing with Iraq in the media. And, you know, like you, he didn't get no authorization to do this. So now will the following members of Congress stand up and say something? Will the American people stand up and say something in regards to what may seem to be an illegal war about to start? And, you know, the amazing thing is, from what I've observed so far in the media, they're not questioning him at all about doing what he's done. And the tragedy is that this is going to lead to troubles all over that hemisphere that shouldn't even be in play. I mean, it's just amazing. And you know what's so funny, Sister Utrecht? Is on Twitter, they're showing a video of him saying exactly what he has just done Obama was going to do. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. Word for word, what he accused Obama of doing, he has just done. So hopefully the people will be able to expose the contradiction with this sick individual. And, you know, maybe tone this thing down and avert this getting bigger than what it, you know, should be. Now, I don't know if Iraq is going to retaliate. I don't know how they really can retaliate without this thing escalating. But it's just ridiculous. And the sad thing is, like you always speak about, we have no one in public office or the media standing up against this type of travesty that is about to happen. I just hope that someone stands up and holds this man accountable for his actions, because if they don't, we are heading for something I don't think we even realize as a nation. And that's sad, because with his type of delusional narcissist thinking, he may think that, you know, there may be a bunker for him, that he will survive the catastrophe when it's all said and done. Yeah, well, you know what I mean? Maybe he has a special bunker in Mar-a-Lago that will stop, you know, certain things. But, you know, unfortunately, he doesn't. And the sad thing is, he doesn't take into consideration other people's children. Because you know his children are not going, and you know those that put forward this type of agenda, their children never signs up for the inevitable. So I just like to say Happy New Year to all of the listeners. Let's keep ourselves laser focused on what's going on, and let's do whatever is necessary to make sure that this thing doesn't escalate and take lives that are not meant to be taken. And you take care of yourself and enjoy the weekend. And I hope
you
had some lentil soup, because I have.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bill from Brooklyn, you're on the air. Hello, Bill.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, good. Yeah. Good afternoon to everyone. Yes, I'm from Brooklyn, but today I am just within blocks of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And I tell you, I don't even dare look down the street and look at the White House. It just nauseates me so much. But I'm here visiting a family and extended holiday. And Happy New Year, everyone. But my opinion is that we are in treacherous times. And I really believe that a draft will be reinstituted. I believe Mr. Trump is very serious about having a war with Iran. And the only way that can be executed is with a massive number of U.S. forces on the ground. Now, if the people stand for that, then it's to their own detriment and that of their children and grandchildren and to the world globally. So we are in a very dangerous time with a very unhinged person at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. So that's, I think, is one of the first signs. And I think a draft would probably be instituted sooner rather than later. So that'll be one of the first signs. But we're already into the tar pit of this morass with Iran that Trump has really started, and with this assassination of one of their military leaders, I don't see any way back.
Well, I don't see any way back soon. What would, I think, be a very strong factor would be how the people of the United States react. Are they going to be passive about this and let the president have his way? I mean, you're not even talking to Congress.
Exactly.
Nancy Pelosi said she had no idea that he was undertaking this. Certainly, we have military people who should have been in the first line of defense and who should have said, no, Mr. President, you just can't do it that way.
Exactly.
Yeah, procedures.
And we've seen from his what's come out in the New York Times just a week ago about how with the whole Ukrainian situation, how he was advised almost people, including the mustache guy whose name escaped me, Bolton, almost pleading
Bolton
with him not to hold back the lawful funds that Congress had made and provided for Ukraine, which was also signed off by the president. They knew that this was illegal, yet he didn't listen to his top people, and he's not listening to his top people now with this Iran situation.
But at the same time, they are not fighting publicly about it. They're not letting the people know that something dramatic is happening. Dramatic and unconstitutional is happening in the White House. The president is out of control.
Yes.
And there should be the topic of discussion in the United States right about now should be, what are the options that the people have to bring this man out of control, to take him out of decision making in these kinds of aspects, because he is dangerous and he will even inadvertently get us into more trouble than we need.
Most definitely. And I tell you, I mean, I was very small when during the 70s when my parents and others were lining up for gas. And, I have some vague memories of the troubles that brought for them and many others, having to go out at 4 and 5 o'clock in the morning to put their cars in line, and depending on what your license plate was, if you're able to get gas or not. We're headed for that once again. There's no doubt about it. And Iran could shut down the Strait of Hormuz overnight, and there's nothing. I mean, yes, they would lose some ships and all that, but there's nothing that the U.S. can do to interdict that. And anyone that believes that the U.S. forces could stop that, they really are not being very sensible. I mean, those are their waters, and that strait is not that wide, and it would just taking the sinking of a tanker or some other device to bring that whole strait into to a complete stop of any type of shipping going on of oil.
Like I say, I'm very, and I know most people are, and yet still some don't particularly care. And others believe that Donald Trump should be able to make any decision he wishes because, after all, he's president of the United States. He can do anything. And if they're in doubt, he reminds them, I could do anything.
Yes.
Thanks so much for your call today.
Thank you,
Lincoln. Thank you. Lincoln from Mount Vernon, you're on the air.
Hey, Happy New Year, Utrecht.
Thank you. You too.
And thank you, and same to everyone, all the listeners. Supposing Russia had responded to the invasion of Libya, that wrongful invasion, which caused the complete destruction of the most successful state in the USA. Supposing Russia had responded to that illegal war that Obama and Hillary did not get no Congress support about. I think we choose to see what we want to see. I think we should always look at things in context. Supposing Russia had responded to the wrongful invasion of Iraq. That's what we're talking about right now. Supposing countries had responded to the invasion, the wrongful invasion of Haiti. Trump is no more out of control than the rest. Just that the rest are calm and cool-looking, and we allow them to get away with what they're getting away with. And we are responsible for this present situation because we allowed Bush to get away with killing almost a million Iraqis. What we are only scared now because it might hit our doorsteps, because Russia is beginning to say that, hey, look, you are going too far. And in reference to what that brother said about closing the Strait of Hormuz, Iran couldn't do that unless Iran is looking for Third World War. Iran can't stop when the USA creates sanctions against them. If they can't stop that, how are they going to close the Strait of Hormuz? They cannot. People don't understand the U.S. military might. It's vast. That's why even Russia hesitate before responding to something like the invasion of Libya. A lot of us, we're talking, but we don't understand the full specter of this thing. It's vast. It's a lot of enigma that's involved. And I think, I hate to say this, and I don't want to sound uppity, but I think, you know, I don't think we understand the depth of all of what's going on, you know.
I think you would accept. We may not understand all the intricate details, but I think we could accept that, at least from a very narrow perspective about the role of President Trump in all of this, that is, the role of the United States in all of this, I think we could accept that people have major concerns, and at the same time, we see a hesitancy to engage. That is very troubling.
I personally, Utrecht, I'm going to say this, and I might lose a lot of friends, but when I look at things, I look at it in context, and I look at it in international context. And when I look for 8 years, Obama killed innocent people with drone strikes. Where was the outrage? Parties, people at weddings were blown away. For 8 years, this went on. He killed more people with his drone strikes than Bush did. Bush also killed people, innocent people. Where was the American outrage? I think we all are only outraged when it seems like the chicken is about to come home to roost. You know, I personally, the cause of look at Bernie Sanders. What did he say about the invasion of Libya? Imagine Bernie Sanders talk about what he wanted to do for people about socialism. The greatest socialist act was what Gaddafi did. Bernie Sanders did not utter one word against what happened to Libya. That's so hypocritical. And we here, we're in our delusion and our hypocrisy. I don't hear anybody talking about Bernie Sanders and Obama, etc., for all the wickedness they have done. We are hypocrites. And I personally, I would rather see Trump win again because of what America is doing. You know, I'm not a Trump supporter, but I'd rather see Trump win over any of these Democrats, etc., just to spite America. America deserves Trump. And I will not back away from that, even if I'm the last person saying that. This reminds me of a woman. Her son used to go around robbing and sticking up people at gunpoint. And I knew this woman personally in the Bronx. And one day someone shot her son. And she came to me and she said, "Oh, Lincoln, they shot my son." I said, "Oh? Yeah, where were you when your son was going around sticking people up at gunpoint? Oh, you thought that was cute, huh? But now that it's hit your home, it's not cute anymore." And that's how we behave in America. I see America like I see the family of the mafia. They live good because of all the murders and all the wickedness that the mafia carries out. And so, you know, they don't complain about, you know, all the executions, etc. And we are the same way here. We live good here. We experience certain amenities, so we don't say anything. But as soon as it is about to blow up in our faces, suddenly we all get petrified. No, we deserve this. We caused this. If you were criticizing Bush for years and all the rest, Allende, you should think about what happened to Allende. Look what Nixon did with Allende. 3,000 people were killed. Look what they did with Panama, with Noriega. Look what they did the brother before Noriega. They blew him out of the sky because he would not acquiesce to the CIA. And we watch all this going on.
And okay, I get your point. But I have to ask you, just to say, to address, how do you address the situation unfolding now? We're clear, and nobody could argue that there wasn't or hasn't been a precedence for the United States' illogical and illegal and unconstitutional conduct in all of these instances. Okay, great. What happens now?
I say you pick a fight, and you didn't care when it wasn't going to hurt you, so you assume the responsibilities. I don't want Trump to be kicked out because it's just like if you let a child or anyone go unpunished. You know what? Recently, three mountain lions...
Wait a minute, because you're heading back in the area you amply covered, and we understand your point. I'm still asking you, all these things notwithstanding, because they are on the record, they are facts. What is to happen now as the situation unfolds and the United States is the leading cause? Any ideas? Okay, we might have lost Lincoln. We lost Lincoln. Bill from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Afternoon, Eutrice.
Hello. Good afternoon to you.
Good. The first thing I have to say is, Lincoln, if you worry about losing friends, you won't lose this brother. You're 100% on point, and even though we haven't met, we're more than friends. You're my brother, and everything you said, I agree with. But that's not what I called about today. What I called about today is this murder in the park in New York City. I listened the other day to the speculations and the the talk back and forth of, you know, we know that she was buying drugs, and that's important to the story, and I 100% disagree. I don't think it's any more important to the story than saying that Eric Gardner was where he was because he was selling loose cigarettes. We don't know that. We don't know that she was buying weed or any other drug. That's purely speculation. We do not know that. And the only facts that we know is that a young woman is dead by murder. That's all we know as a fact. So I don't even care if she was buying drugs, but we don't know that. And it doesn't matter. She lost her life by no fault of her own. She was walking through the park. We don't know why. 7 o'clock in the evening is not the night, is not the middle of the night. I know it gets dark at 5:30, it's the winter, but 7 o'clock certainly is not the middle of the night. And she's 18 years old, or was 18 years old, so I have to assume she was a freshman. And this happened in December, which means she had only been there for 3 months. So she's a three-month freshman. She's from Virginia. I don't know if she's ever been to New York in her life. So to say that she knew that the park was dangerous, there's no way to know if she knew that. She had only been there a couple of months. There's no way to know if she knew that. Maybe she did, maybe she didn't. If she was a senior, 21 years old, been there 4 years, yeah, you'd have to say she knew that. But we don't know that. And for the family to be outraged by the police initially saying that she was there for a drug buy, they are absolutely correct to be outraged. That's something that is done to black people all the time. Well, we murdered him, but he was up to no good. And they are right to push back on that. And we shouldn't feel that, okay, we want this white girl to be mistreated like we are normally mistreated. There's no evidence that she was buying drugs, and even if she was, that doesn't justify murdering her. Now, what I really think is the story, and what we as people that are seekers of truth, seekers of justice, seekers of righteousness, is we should be focused on, did those three boys do this? We don't know that. I mean, this story smacks so much of Central Park 5. We don't know that they did this. All we know is that the police say that they did this. And even if they have confessions, the Central Park Five, they had confessions from them as well. So we don't know anything about this case other than a young woman was murdered. And we should try to, you know, when the Central Park situation happened, there were a lot of black people that said, well, yeah, you know, they did it. And I'll tell you, if not for Yousef Salam's mother, who was a tremendous advocate for him, and BAI at the time, PRN didn't exist, there wasn't a lot of support for them, and they were 100% innocent. So we don't know if the same thing is happening again, and that should be the focus of our attention, is did these boys do it? Supporting them if they didn't, that they get a fair shake, that they get a fair trial. And that's what's important, not whether she was buying weed or not buying weed.
I appreciate your point. I disagree. We can't, in any situation where you have a person murdered allegedly by three young boys, just say, well, all of the things are irrelevant, except, you know, we should hone in on the fact that a person lost her life. That is what is important. Well, that's from one perspective. Well, we were talking here about arriving at an understanding from an investigative perspective. And in that case, everything is important.
Is it important to Eric Garner's death that maybe he was selling loose cigarettes? Is that important? Or is it only important that he was murdered? He was murdered, same as she was. Mm-hmm. He was murdered with witnesses. And if
but you're drawing an analogy between two
very different things. As far as I'm concerned, they're not very different.
The agent of Garner's death happened to be a policeman who applied the chokehold, the illegal chokehold, and in the presence of other police officers and witnesses. Now, that's a whole different case.
I don't think it is.
The chokehold.
I think both are murders.
The way they chose to subdue and confront Eric Garner was the case.
As far as I'm concerned, Eutrice, both are murders, and why Eric Garner was on location.
I have to challenge you here. You can't say, as far as I am concerned, this blah, 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 blah.
As far as I'm concerned, my opinion. That's
yes,
my
your opinion.
Opinion.
And you are hopping from your opinion to the larger subject as to what you believe, based on your opinion, ought to have happened.
No. Eutrice, when I call, I never hop from my opinion. Everything I say is my opinion. Everything that comes out of my mouth is my opinion.
I'm trying to let you know how and why I disagree with your opinion, because you're not just expressing an opinion. I'm trying to tell you from a reporter's perspective that from the very beginning, there was an indication of bias in this case. From the very beginning, in the same way that when the Kennedy son actually overdosed in a Harlem vestibule, the police preferred to let the public know that he was murdered.
Okay.
And that was symptomatic of what would have happened in any situation where the so-called victim was prominent. A member of a prominent family. The system organizes itself to take the edge off so that we wouldn't look at the Kennedy boy as a junkie. If it were a black person, it would have been the case of another junkie killing himself by overdose.
Okay.
How does that case
correlate to this case?
Okay. The very beginning of the case was that she was murdered. And it's clear she was murdered.
Yes.
And yet people are not willing to understand what happens when you investigate a murder. You have to look at every single aspect and everything accounted for. So that even when you speak theoretically, as the police did, for example, I had identified one of the suspects, or maybe two of the three boys as suspects, and then they mysteriously dropped that.
Suspects. And as far as the New York City police are concerned, the fact that they say that these boys did this means nothing to me. They lie on a daily basis.
Nobody knows that better than me.
I know. That's why I'm saying this is a fact that they lie on a daily basis. So we shouldn't take anything they say as the gospel, because we know that it is not.
Yes, but we don't know what happened in that park.
So what I'm saying is we shouldn't speculate on a scenario of she went there to buy drugs and but
no,
even,
I
even,
am not
even
speculating.
In that,
I'm quoting people from the community. I spoke to people in the community.
Okay, that they are speculating. They weren't there.
Perhaps
they weren't there. So
perhaps
you're
speculating.
Quoting their speculation.
But that's what police do all the time. You talk to people.
But,
you ask what they saw, what they think, what they witnessed.
Well,
and
the people you're talking to didn't witness. You didn't talk to any witnesses. But what police do and what journalists do are two separate things. Journalists,
look,
and you're a journalist,
someone
who teaches journalism.
In the Central Park case, it was my paper that told the entire truth, that broke that story, that the cops made up lies. That was what we did. We told the truth. We talked to a number of people. Peter Noel. To this day, nothing has caused a turnover of anything that he had cited. In the Tawana Brawley case, I myself broke that case. I actually had her medical records. I quoted directly what it said. I confronted the Attorney General of New York, and he sent for six people to witness this interview. I wasn't playing. We had the other Central Park case with the Central Park Five. Again, Peter Noel broke the story, and everything that he had annotated in his stories, because he wrote more than one, was absolutely true. Cops made up all kinds of lies. And the sympathy extended to this woman, not that she shouldn't get sympathy, it was a really cruel thing that happened to her, but the story was how the police orchestrated lies to implicate these five men. They specifically made up these lies, and we debunked every single one of them. So I'm very accustomed with the practice of how in an investigation that is deemed to be hot and that incidentally involves white victims and young men of color accused of certain crimes, it never goes right. And you have to ask all the questions. That's what I did. That's what our reporters did. And still, we were the only ones. And then even when the police officers were exposed, nothing happened to them. Nothing happened to them. That is the issue. So I'm not worried or bothered by the fact that people are uncomfortable with perhaps a more than usual close examination of the facts. That doesn't bother me. I'm interested in the truth. So I don't assume this person is telling the truth or that person is telling the truth. The evidence tells the truth. You talk to people, you get a sense of what they're saying, as I did. I went there, talked to people, fully aware that they're not experts. They're not criminologists. the neighborhood people, but they know the neighborhood. And they gave me relevant information to consider. And in a murder, all these pieces of information are relevant because they help fill out the picture. So it's not a matter of I am right, you're wrong. No way. It is what is the information we have? What information seems to be missing to help us get a full picture or a fuller picture of what happened here? I'm not assuming innocence or guilt on the part of anyone. I'm interested in what information was gathered, by whom, what did it show? And you keep at it, and suddenly a picture emerges that tells you this more than likely was the case. We knew when the mayor of the city of New York and when Donald Trump himself, as a citizen of New York, had pronounced that the Central Park Five should be executed because they certainly committed this crime against this woman. Our little paper was the only one consistently pointing out gaps, pointing out contradictions, pointing out problems with the evidence, the so-called evidence. And we proved that the police were running around trying to come up with, you know, their own theoretical profiles to produce the attackers, the so-called attackers. They were breaking the law left, right, and center. Because Trump wants these five young men executed. This was heavy stuff. And if you don't have the tenacity to stick to it and just simply follow a protocol that addresses the question of what evidence is available? And what does that evidence point to? Then, you know, the other side wins. Not because they have evidence, but because, in so many cases that we've covered, they corrupt the evidence. They organize the evidence to prove a predetermined outcome. And that has been the history of so-called justice for people of color in the criminal justice system. So I'm not dealing with notoriety and fans and who believes it. I'm talking about the facts. What are the facts? When I went toe-to-toe with then Attorney General Robert Abrams in his office, and I asked him about the facts, he wasn't able to produce not one. Not one. The man actually said, if Tawana Brawley were discovered dead, the case would have been solved much more easily. Imagine that. That's the top law enforcement officer of the state saying things like that. Okay. I appreciate your point. I really do. But I also regard it as having the natural gaps that would come when people are not going beyond a certain point into a case. You form an opinion based on readily available facts as presented in the newspapers or on TV or wherever. But if you were to take, and it's not possible in most cases, a deeper look for yourself, you begin to ask questions that remain unanswered. All right, we have Marcus from Wisconsin. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Ms. Lee.
Hello,
time
Marcus.
To change. Yeah, thank you. You brought up the potential of war, and of course, in all of human history, no war is possible without us complying, without us going along with it. And that's why we've had one beginning almost 20 years ago, and we are actively involved in five. And you're right, of course, Trump is out of control. They're all out of control. And he was elected by less than 20% of the eligible electorate, and the other 80% of the eligible electorate has stood still for it. So if I may, with your permission, I'd like to take the next 60 seconds and turn over the remainder of my time on this subject to Mark Twain. He said, look at you in war, what mutton you are and how ridiculous. Talking about war, he said, there has never been a just one, never an honorable one, on the part of the instigator of the war. I can see a million years ahead, and this rule will never change in so many as half a dozen instances. The loud little handful, as usual, will shout for the war. The pulpit will warily and cautiously object at first. The great, big, dull bulk of the nation will rub its sleepy eyes and try to make out why there should be a war, and will say earnestly and indignantly, it is unjust and dishonorable, and there is no necessity for it. Then the handful will shout louder. A few fair men on the other side will argue and reason against the war with speech and pen, and at first will have a hearing and be applauded. But it will not last long. Those others will outshout them, and presently the anti-war audiences will thin out and lose popularity. Before long, you will see this curious thing, the speakers stoned from the platform and free speech strangled by hordes of furious men who in their secret hearts are still at one with those stoned speakers as earlier, but do not dare to say so. And now the whole nation, pulpit and all, will take up the war cry and shout itself hoarse and mob any honest man who ventures to open his mouth, and presently such mouths will cease to open. Next, the statesmen will invent cheap lies, putting the blame upon the nation that is attacked, and every man will be glad of those conscience-soothing falsities and will diligently study them and refuse to examine any refutations of them. And thus he will by and by convince himself that the war is just, and will thank God for the better sleep he enjoys after this process of grotesque self-deception. The writing is by Mark Twain. The character is the voice of Satan from The Mysterious Stranger, written somewhere in the late 1890s. We haven't learned much, have we, Ms. Lee?
I would say so. I would agree. We haven't learned much. Because, again, I'm going to bring it to my direct experience. I remember the first program I did after Trump was elected was to talk about what a danger he would be to this nation, because he was mentally unstable. I kept hammering the same theme. I was vindicated by a report, which I shared with the audience, from the American Psychological Association, talking about their fear about Trump because he appears to be mentally unstable. They just let this man do what he wanted to do. Of course, we have limits. People can protest. People can make their voices heard. But that would not have been the solution. The solution was to have him removed through constitutional mechanisms, which no one in Congress has yet ventured to apply. And here we see time and again his erratic behavior, reckless behavior, irresponsible behavior, that each time, I'm just surprised that we haven't ended up in major catastrophe nationally yet. If this doesn't look like a reason to rethink our actions and our thoughts about this, I don't know what will suffice. But I think we really
come
ought
around
to pay attention
to the idea, though, that in the end, it is we ourselves who permit this. Yes, I understand constitutional correctives and all that stuff. But if they don't choose to use them, it's up to us. And they have obviously chosen not to use them. They didn't during the Obama
I cannot argue against that point. That is, to me, an ironclad point. Thank you so much, Marcus, for contributing today. Thank you all for contributing and for making such a strong effort to keep our discussions at a very high level. It is the weekend. Surround yourselves with people who bring wonderful dimension to your life, and see each other Monday. Bye-bye.